Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Happy New Year, Wake Up Hollywood. This is
Wake Up Hollywood.
And my guest co-host with the most, Mr. David Jensen.
Hi, Nikki.
How are you?
I'm good, man. Happy New Year.
High five.
Oh, I'm going to be at a disadvantage.
That's true. There's only one that came armed with a weapon of choice.
And Nikki's wielding the soundboard.
That's today. Right. That's right. So how was your New Year's Eve, man?
New Year's Eve was crazy. It was, kept it low-key. Hung out with m'lady.
M'lady.
We're down in San Diego.
Nice.
Enjoying.
You have some good weather?
It was nice.
It was nice, right?
It was nice and temperate.
Did you get... did you party? Did you have any crazy sugar cookies or anything like that?
Martinelli's and fresh baked cookies. That's how I rolled. Got a little crazy. How about you, man?
I went big. I went to Vegas. I haven't done Vegas since my 20s. Mm-hmm. So it was a little bit different as far as like substances involved and all of that, but we went to see.
Now it's all Metamucil.
Honestly, it's a struggle for me to stay up past 12. It's like, man, yeah. I was like ready to bail at like 12:30, but we saw Bruno Mars, right, which was amazing. He's like one of the best performers I've seen. And then we saw Criss Angel's Believe show. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but
no.
Dude, the guy, like, I've heard a lot about this guy's show, so mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I want to see what all the hype's about. Never watched his TV show, never was into it, but a close friend of mine, she saw him, and she was like, you got to see his magic show live. It's insane. And it really was insane. Like, he did these crazy tricks.
Did you get your mind freaked?
I was mind freaked. Like, he cut his assistant in half, like, with the
verbally?
Blade. I mean...
Or was it this is a trick.
Metaphorically? Yeah. No, but it was crazy. He had this huge razor blade, cut her in half. You see blood, you see guts, you see the legs running across the stage, which I thought was funny. Mm-hmm. And the skirt was like really short, so it wasn't like somebody could contort, you know, like their body. Yeah. It was just really weird. He did a lot of like freakish things, but a lot of good tricks.
You know the secret to that?
Tell me.
He uses a bloody double.
Is that true?
No, you don't know.
Actually, you know what?
Anytime
you know,
I can drop.
I heard a little secret. Maybe you were in the room when Dave Weinerman mentioned this. Mm-hmm. I'm totally going to get him shot for saying this. But he told me Siegfried and Roy, like the reason their show is...
They have secret twins
they have
in
secret
a bunker
twins.
Somewhere?
No, seriously. I've heard this.
Yeah.
And now, like, can you imagine the twin that wasn't eaten by a lion? He's like, shit!
He's like, now I've got to...
I could never go out without, you know... Mm-hmm. But apparently that's the truth. Like, they take turns in showing up as... Siegfried and Roy, and they have twins. But so I was wondering that with him, just because, dude, there were some tricks where there'd be a curtain on mm-hmm. him, and then you know, or like a little shroud, and then they'd take it off, he'd be gone, and then he'd be sitting in like the fifth row in the audience.
Yeah,
you know, or like there was like a little puppet version of him, and they'd put him in a chair, they'd put something over the chair, and then within 2 seconds, they just take the shroud off. He's not in the chair, and then he's just like across the stage, like, "Hey guys, what are you doing?" So just weird stuff. It was a lot of like reappearing and appearing, but it was great, you know, Vegas. Yeah. But dude, they shut down Vegas Boulevard. You know, it's a mess. It's like hardcore.
I haven't been there recently.
Have you been there on New Year's Eve?
I was going to be there right now for CES, but I didn't end up going.
Okay. Have you ever been there for New Year's Eve?
No.
It's crazy.
They close
down the major street. So. You can't take a cab to any major hotel. Mm-hmm. Everything's barricaded, so you can't walk like directly to a place. You have to go through these little openings. And there's like thousands of people trying to get through these little openings.
Hashtag not my Vegas. No, sir.
But it was great. It was a lot of fun. The weather was cold as shit. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people that were smashed. I had my ass handed to me at the blackjack table. I don't know if you gamble, but...
No, not really.
I was like, I should have known. Like, right on, we were so tired.
Only on Netflix choices.
It took me 6 hours to get there and 7 hours to get back because of traffic. But mm-hmm. I placed one bet. I was like, I'm going to play $50 on just one blackjack hand. I'm too tired to gamble tonight. So I lost. And that should have been like, dude, walk away forever. And then I ended up pressing my luck the next day, and I was just like, ooh, this is from bad to worse. I'd have a 20, and he'd have like a 14, mm-hmm. and he would somehow get a three, and an ace. You know, yeah. I was just like, what? You know, or something stupid like that. It was like, it was a little bit, it was moda. Yeah. Moda.
It was moda.
Yeah. 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 So you have good feeling about 2016?
I do.
And I heard a rumor, a nasty rumor.
Okay.
That you saw Star Wars.
I did. I think me and a few other people.
It broke records. It broke every record that I think has been ever made, right? Do you know what the gross
was? It's getting there. It's passing them. I think it's past Titanic now and still has to pass Avatar.
Not in your book. Something. Yeah. I'm kidding. No, it was a good movie. What'd you think?
I thought it was... I really dug it. I don't think it was perfect.
No, it's not perfect.
But it didn't need to be. What it did is it made me feel like I bought that was the universe again.
Right.
And I felt the magic of the original trilogy. So what it needed to do, it did, and that's a huge accomplishment. There are little nitpicky things as a fan. I can say, what about this or that? But I was entirely pleased with it.
There were some questionable casting decisions, I thought. You know,
oh,
like,
really?
Like, some were great and some were like, meh.
Who was meh?
I thought Finn was okay.
John Boyega?
Like, meh. I thought he was all right.
Yeah.
I thought...
He was a little eager to please.
Kylo Ren mm-hmm. was great with the mask on.
Adam Driver.
Yeah, I thought he was meh.
No helmet. No helmet.
No helmet.
Do you notice that? No helmet here.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course not. Come on.
As a helmet wearer, let me take off my mask. as you can see, helmet hair.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah. No, I understand. Mm-hmm. But there are some really great things about it, though, too.
Yeah. Great things.
What's the girl's name? What's
Rey.
Her name? Rey. She's awesome.
Daisy Ridley.
Yep.
Was amazing. The best part.
She was the best part. Like, yeah. You've seen that meme where it's like, things I want to get into in Star Wars. It has, like, all the spaceship, like the Millennium Falcon, and then it has her in the corner. It's like, who made this? This is terrible. Jeez.
Come on.
Jeez Louise. But, I mean, I actually rated, like, all the Star Wars after I saw them. I gave, you know, from 1, 2, 3, it was like a 6, 7, 7, and then 8, 9, 9. I gave this one a 9. What did you give it on a scale of 1 to 10?
8 or 9.
Well, choose. Choose now.
I'll go
choose
with...
now. Whoa.
Just kidding. Narrowly missed. I'll go with eight.
You give it an 8. Okay.
I'm happy with an 8. Yeah.
Sorry. I give it the cock of approval. Yeah.
The traditional.
Anyway. Cock of approval. I think our special guest has arrived. Mr. Matt Besser, how are you?
Hey, guys. I heard you talking about Star Wars through the door.
Oh, you joined the right conversation at the right time, my friend. Come on into the cantina.
So I take it you've seen the movie?
Yeah.
You're like, what did you think of it?
I'll give it a 10. I give every sci-fi movie that I watch.
Our studio audience loves that.
Bunch of drones. I consider sci-fi the history of the future, so I think it's beyond criticism. Even the Star Wars movies people didn't like, I liked. I don't know if I'm gonna give them tens, but
that's
definitely I'm not gonna take any of them below a 7. How about that?
Nice.
Wow. Even the first one. The first one for me. Oh. Just,
every time when you say, do you mean episode one?
Episode
or do you mean,
one. Yeah, no, not okay. Star Wars. Star Wars. Is
honestly, fine. I don't even distinguish them in my mind. I saw them all once, but I just enjoy the story.
Yeah, the story
I like
awesome.
Getting into
the story
it.
Is awesome.
like,
I actually did like Finn a lot. I liked all of them. I don't have any criticisms of it. I quite enjoyed it.
But, you know, when you see, like, Star Wars, like the original, there was not one weak link in that entire movie.
I didn't watch this movie and felt a weak link.
Yeah, there are some things that, like,
what's a weak link in Star Wars? Talk to me, boys.
Which episode are we talking? Because there's
talking
some
four.
Things.
OG gangster, original gangster.
That's the thing, because when I criticize this, I say this is probably my favorite mythology, you know?
He's using his hands, just so you
know. I am.
I'm going to interrupt you, but I'm going to say I think that Star Wars is a fantasy and not sci-fi. What do you think about that?
I 100% agree.
And I think that movie, The Martian, is just barely sci-fi.
That's not really sci-fi.
Yeah. It's this world just with a little nudge toward
the
future.
In 20 years, it'll look like the past, probably.
Yeah.
That was deep.
Yeah, man. Like, well, there's barely, besides being on Mars, I'm not sure, because sci-fi is science fiction. So it's the fiction of science. So beyond the fact that we aren't on Mars, like I'm pretty sure everything else in that movie was scientifically based.
Very much so, yeah.
Botany, right? That was the main science of it.
Right, so that's what made it neat and enjoyable. But I barely put either of those movies in the sci-fi category.
Star Wars, I mean, it's kind of...
It's fantasy, though. There's so little science in it. Science, sci-fi usually takes something in our own world and it exaggerates it a little bit. And there's not much of that in there. It's closer to like Game of Thrones, really.
Yeah, that's true.
We've been talking, we've been doing some writing lately, and one thing that we've really talked about is Joseph Campbell and the monomyth, and Star Wars is just a concrescence of that. And really, you know, it's Arthurian legend. Luke Skywalker is Arthur. Merlin is Obi-Wan.
Mm-hmm.
All of those archetypal stories are there. And it's the technology is really just a sub-detail
right.
to this, where it's really just a story.
I mean, you got a lightsaber, you got robots, but there's not really any... It's just a magical sword.
It's not pushing the envelope.
You know?
And the robots are like serfs or servants. Like if you ever watch Hidden Fortress by Kurosawa, it's an inspiration in a lot of ways for A New Hope. And it starts with two servants who've been exiled from their territory wandering the desert looking for another one.
That's the movie you were telling me about that I have to watch. It's like old school.
So it's kind of, and the story is kind of told through their perspective as they meet these different samurai who are like the Jedi, and there's a smuggler character, there's a princess in distress, and then there's an evil samurai with the black helmet. It's just a retelling of a story we've told ourselves several times that always bears repeating.
And on a lighter note, Spaceballs 2 is coming. Spaceballs 2 is coming!
That's what I hear.
Maybe I'm just a super fan of that movie, but I love that movie. Yeah. Anyways, Matt, let's talk about it. This isn't a Star Wars podcast, believe it or not. Matt, you are a stand-up comic extraordinaire, and you're also one of the founding members of the Upright Citizens Brigade.
That's right.
You've been making people laugh for years and years and years. Tell us, like, what was the thing that got you in it? Like, what was the trigger that was like, oh, my God, I want to make people laugh?
Well, I guess I did a radio show in college because I was into music, punk music. I did a lot
of... What kind of punk music?
Well, you seem younger than me, so I don't know if you'll know all these bands.
Try me.
All the old school bands, the big ones, Minor Threat, The Damned, D.I., go on and on.
I like all those bands.
But those, you know, I had a punk show in the late 80s and did banter between songs, and we would drink and get high. And the more we did that, the more banter we would do and the less music we would play. And then people started to tell me I was funny. I'm like, huh. And I mean, I knew I was a class clown, but I'd never had it told to me in an official way, I guess.
Oh, you never thought, you know what? I could make a living doing this.
You know what?
It was a compliment.
I was from Arkansas. I didn't really think. I thought you had to be from Hollywood or New York City to be a comic for some reason.
Well, where are you from?
Arkansas, Little Rock, Arkansas.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
But I did a stand-up contest, like a spring break, win a spring break trip contest at UMass, which was a school near where I was going.
You went to Amherst, right?
I went to Amherst.
I read that in your bio.
And I did really well, and it was in front of one of the biggest crowds I've done up to this day. I think it was like 2,000 people.
That's
and
amazing.
When you do well in front of 2,000, you kind of get the bug. And the funny thing was is I did – even though I got last, I think I was getting them for an unearned wrong reason because I was so nervous. I was shaking and stuttering, which I don't have a stutter, but I was just going, blah, 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 and I was jumping all around in my act. Like it was all in my head. And
that was all the cocaine that was running through your face.
Well, it was natural cocaine, but speaking of which, people thought I was doing a Bobcat Goldthwait impression, basically. Without irony, they thought that's what I was trying to do. So they thought I had this funny manic energy, and really that was just me almost having a nervous breakdown on stage. But
what made you get up in front of that many people? Like,
well, I didn't know it was going to be that many people. I really did the contest to win a trip to Jamaica. My buddy and I both did it. It was sadly probably based on my desire to get weed easier than I was getting it in Massachusetts.
Awesome.
But that was the original thing. And then when I graduated from college and started just getting regular jobs, I'm not a people person. And I got a job at this place called Dick's Last Resort. I don't know if you've heard of that. Probably some listeners have. It's this, it's a franchise, kind of like Ed DeBevick's or Carnegie Deli, these places where it's kind of part of the ambiance to be rude to the customers.
I've heard. And
I was like, this is the job for me because I'm not good at being nice to the customers. So
like I could be a dick and get away
with it. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm a professional dick. And even for years after I had that job and I was starting to be a professional comedian, my friends from college who didn't really keep up with me would see me and go, oh, I hear you're working at an asshole restaurant. You're working at a dick bar or something like that. A bar where you're a dick to people. And it's like, yeah, pretty much. It's pretty much what a stand-up is. Kind of the persona that, like, that I've
that sharpened
embraced.
Your heckling chops.
It's all crowd work.
It is. It is, yeah. Really. This one place, I can't remember if it was Carnegie Deli or Dick's. I think it was Dick's. They told me I was the host because I wasn't even smart enough to be a waiter, but I was the host, and I was the first person everybody greeted on the way in, obviously. And people were all hyped up to get the experience when they walked in the door. So some guys would just come in drunk and go, hey, you big nose, ugly. Am I allowed to curse on this?
Oh, yeah.
Fuck you,
yeah.
Ugly motherfucker. Yeah. They would, like, just really attack me walking in the door, and I was given certain words that I couldn't say to them.
Like?
Yeah.
I don't think I could call them a motherfucker. I forget what it was. I was supposed to more gently rib them.
Right, right.
You know?
Slightly ruffle their feathers.
Yeah.
But when I, at call one point, lousy. I got a better job somewhere else. It might have been the Carnegie Deli job. And, so I, at one point, I knew I was going to quit, and this one dude walked in. Who knows what he said to me? It was always something about my fucking nose, though, or, you know, anti-Semitic subtext. But he said something to me, and I just lit into this dude. I just fucking railed him and cursed him out, and cursed out his girlfriend. To the point,
what did I do?
To the point where, like, his face went from, like, this is going to be fun to, hey, this isn't cool. He complained to the manager, and I got fired that night.
Really?
Oh, and then, but
dude,
I was,
how do you get fired? That's awesome.
Well, I was quitting anyway, so I was kind of planning on that. But then I started working at the Carnegie Deli, where they had the same kind of attitude there. And who knows how long I was there, but I was there a few months. And at one point, the manager was like, here, you need to pass out. People are going to be coming in looking for leaving their resumes for a new position, and it was for the host position. I was taking all these resumes all day. And at the end of the day, they're like, we need to talk to you. And they're like, we don't think your attitude matches the attitude at Carnegie. I'm like, I'm too rude for the famously rude Carnegie Deli?
Fuck you. Like, no, you can drop the act now.
That's
like,
it.
So that was it. I became professional dick.
That sounds like you're a porn star when you say it like that. Mm-hmm.
Well, hey,
so different. Now when you look back at, you've done all this stuff, and we're going to get into that in a second. Do you see, like, do you think your heckling chops were sharpened at its finest? It, like, that was cutting your teeth for those jobs? Or would you say just hitting the road and dealing with real drunks and comedy clubs was the real test?
I think I've always been pretty good at that, and that probably goes back to even just being picked upon. Like, most stand-ups have either some darkness or some weakness or some abnormality or something that made him an underdog at some point in their life. And I was a skinny little kid who, very skinny, who wanted to fit in with the popular kids and didn't. And that's probably when I got into sci-fi at the same time, too. It used to be nerds weren't cool, everybody.
Before the Big Bang Theory.
When I became a nerd, it wasn't cool. But I think you find, if you have that skill, like, this is how I'll fit in. You know, I guess a lot of class clowns could have that same story, but I feel like me being able to cut down the quarterback of the football team or whatever is what gave me status, and that probably sharpened the skill there. Not to mention my dad was a wily bastard himself. So just being around the dinner table.
He was a heckler.
Or a responder to hecklers, yeah.
I had an older brother, so that's how I learned to heckle. You know, sure. It's like, he heckled me, he still heckles me all the time, and it's like, you got to be quick. If you're not quick, you live down the public shame in the family, you know. But that's amazing.
I wanted to ask, from starting out in comedy, where and when did improv come across your path?
Well,
good question.
Thank you. I've been dying. I've been so excited.
I did not know what improv was. I don't even know if I knew what the word was. I'd probably...
Nikki still doesn't.
I'm like, yeah. Tell me about this.
I probably heard the word jazz improvisation or something like that. And even that I didn't know anything about. But I don't even know if I knew the word, like, we need to improvise a solution. I don't even know if I knew the fucking word, much less the comedy skill. But when I got out of college, as I'm saying, late 80s, early 90s, that's when stand-up was in the middle of its possibly biggest boom ever. It was just all over the television. There were clubs all across the land. And
glory days.
It was, and we're back in them a little bit. But the stand-up clubs in particular, I don't know if they've ever reached the level they were then. And there were too many, really. But I had a friend who was moving to Boulder to go to school, and I didn't have a destination in mind. So I was like, maybe I'll go there and do open mics there and try to get into the Denver comedy scenes, since it was, which is like a half hour away from Boulder. So I went there and still didn't know anything about improv. And when my buddy graduated, or after that summer, I just randomly went to Chicago because it had a huge stand-up scene. There were like 9 clubs within the city proper, which is crazy to think about. And so when you get there and you start looking through the papers at all the stand-up clubs, there was all this improv. And I'd heard of Second City, but only in relation to SCTV, the television show.
I loved SCTV.
Yeah, I didn't really know. I didn't know much about it either. I knew they did sketch, but I guess I didn't know the difference between improv and sketch, which a lot of people still don't.
Well, Bill Murray went to Second City, right? Tons of people.
A lot of those early SNL guys, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of them came from Chicago. A lot of them came from the Canadian Second City, Toronto. But, and I saw some improv at Second City, which was pretty bad, actually. It was pretty corny. And a lot of improv, especially in the early days, was very corny, and especially what we call short-form improv. And I was never a fan of that. But then I saw what we call long-form improv at a place called Improv Olympic in Chicago, headed by this woman, Sharna Halpern, and the guru, and a lot of people like me say the inventor of this improv, Del Close, who also helped start SNL and SCTV and a lot of these places. But he's a comedy guru, and I didn't know about him either at this point. But the first show I saw which ended up having two legendary teams, one called Blue Velveeta. I saw that night. I saw Tim Meadows. But they were all nobodies at this point. Chris Farley.
Wow.
Dave
really?
Koechner, Dave Pasquese. I saw all these not yet legends first night. Yeah. And I was blown away. I was blown away like a lot of people are when they see good improv. I said the thing you want to hear, which is, and I did it. I went up to one of them. I said, I see how a lot of that was improvised, but you guys had to have written that song you all sang together. Like, mm-hmm. y'all started to sing it at the same time. How could you do that? Like, no, there's a method to it. We're not doing it. And that was when I was like,
wow.
That was like the first time I was like, I got to learn this. Like, even.
Yeah.
I went to a college where I feel like in 4 years of my college, I didn't learn anything that affected me much as I did in my first class of improv.
That's like, amazing.
Yeah,
that's,
I took the class and I was like, I've taken many acting classes before and after that. Well, not many, but a few. And a lot of them just seem so ambiguous and so hard to put your finger on how the methodology really works. But with this improv class, it really, especially once I got this guy, Dell, it really helped me. I know I sound like a guy that's been in a cult, but it's proven out with all these people who have come from him and now come from us that it actually does work. And there is this methodology. There's not really a methodology for stand-up. You get up on stage, you do your joke, you see how it goes, you know whether to get rid of it or do it again, you know whether to punch it up, to stretch it out, that it's done. You know, the audience teaches you everything. There's only so many things to learn, and you can learn most of those just from going up on stage many times. But with that, you're only in your own head. So you know everything that's in your own head, but you don't know anything that's in someone else's head unless they're explaining it to you. So when you're improvising with someone on a stage, how do I know what their next move is going to be? I need a methodology to do that.
Was it totally free form, or was there like, okay, you're in a bar, go. Like, was there some kind of...
There's definitely many... It really took me 2 years to go, oh, now I get it. I mean, believe me, there was improvement over the time, but it's like, I don't know what to compare it to, but you eventually have an epiphany. It's like when you ride a bike... It's not a mystery to you how it works. You get like, right. Oh, I got to balance and I got to go fast enough that it's easy to balance. Like you don't just get on and you can do it. You know, you have to be told, your dad has to tell you what to do. And then there are certain things and then you just forget about all those things because they're so obvious once you start doing them. But yes, there is a methodology. There are things to do. It isn't free form. If you don't believe me, just go try it. Go try it with your buddy doing it.
Yes,
improv.
There are additional rules that you can follow to learn how you support.
Well, the great thing about improv is like there's so much live energy and so much focus. And it's like you have to have either a chemistry with the people that you're working with or doing this with, or there has to be something that binds the vision of where it's moving or what the story is.
Well, if you do have a chemistry with someone, especially a long-term chemistry, you can't, there are certain rules that are just going to be innate to you. Mm-hmm. But when you're on stage with eight people, which is 6 to 8 people is your average improv group, how are you going to have a long chemistry with 6 to 8 people unless you mm-hmm. all went to college together or something, which that's happened too. But more likely you're meeting your future comedy partners and you don't know who they are. You don't just have them right away. So if you've had a best friend that you grew up with, you probably do have these natural synchronicity with each other that you don't need some of the rules, but some of these rules make it where you don't have to know a person at all.
Mm-hmm. Do you prefer that? Do you prefer it to be like, I don't know this person, I've never worked with them, let's try
what
this.
I do prefer, and in a big way, and maybe to a fault, is that they do it the way I like to do it, the method, there's different philosophies out there, and we have a certain philosophy at the Upright Citizens Brigade, and if people come in and they aren't doing it that way, it's just obvious to me right away, and it just doesn't work for me. And
God, like, no, but that didn't happen.
Well, it's God bless everybody and whatever floats your boat. I'm that way about religion and music and everything, but just don't. I don't need to listen to your music, and I don't need to have your religion forced on me. So, I'm not going to do my philosophy in your show. So try to do my philosophy in my show. I guess is my theory there.
What I'm glad you mentioned Del Close, because I've everything I've heard makes him sound like this amazing. I may have it wrong, but like to me, he seems like kind of the Joseph Campbell of improv, and that he found these really profound truths that kind of inform human existence in a way, or like a way of living and interacting with with the situations, be it in life or on stage. I was curious, having met him and worked with him, what was the difference? What was the thing about what he was teaching you that, you know, woke that up in you, or that really encouraged you to pursue it?
Well, I'll also contrast him, because I was taking classes at like three different schools at once, too. I was taking a place called Players Workshop, Second City, Improv Olympic, a place called The Annoyance. I was taking them all pretty much at once, so getting a lot of different philosophies thrown at me at once. And at first, not realizing they're all different, I thought, oh, all improvisers are on the same page. And it took me a while to go, oh, they're, a lot of them are kind of teaching me different things, using the same words, but having them mean different things. And they didn't work together, and that's why it made it confusing. And there was also a lot of coddling in improv, which there still is, which kind of is a pet peeve of mine, of just like, everything's great. And it's like, no, not everything is great. And there's a lot of teachers who would just support whatever you did. And that frustrated me too, because I'd get in scenes and the teachers would love them. And I'd get off stage going, that wasn't funny. That was terrible. And I don't feel like I'm learning anything. Whereas Del would just straight up tell you if something was, he would literally say, that was horrible, that you were acting like an idiot. Like, he would just, he was the meanest and best teacher I ever had. Like, even the college I went to, where I never got that great at grades, like, they never, he would kick my ass and make me learn versus kick my ass and make me feel stupid. So the kicking of my ass made me realize the stupid things I was doing. Like, one of my problems was I always thought I was funnier than everybody else. Or like, I felt like if you're not going with my idea, get off my boat. And I'm not talking about philosophy now. I'm talking about my idea for the scene, right? Mm-hmm. But I learned it's so much easier to build a scene together and to listen to your partner and to find the funny together, rather than to just come in, have a whole map in my head of how the scene should go and try to force my partner into it. That's no fun to improvise with that person. And also it doesn't work out as well. Room for a sketch show or for a sitcom or anything like that. Like, if you're just going to go in and be stubborn about your own idea and not listen to anyone else's input, probably no one else is going to want to work with you.
See, that to me is like ego-based. You know, like, that's one of the reasons I love being in a band, because it's like you create something together. You create a vibe, or you create a song, or you create a groove, and it's like everybody's an equal part of this playing field. And
But you know what? I always think about that with bands, because I would not say most bands are equal. It's usually the lead singer is a little more equal than other animals.
Cracking the whip.
And a lot of bands will keep the name through the years, and it's really only two of the lead guitarist and the vocals.
And the rest are cycled
and
out.
And that drummer and bass player is always...
Yeah. It's never a democracy, but there's always like... There's a party that wants to impress the other band members.
Right. You like it when you hear those stories, but you also hear stories about the Van Halen brothers are total fucking assholes or whatever. So you never know. But that will fall apart in an improv group if that happens. Mm-hmm. And some of the groups when I joined early on, I was on a group with this, and I won't even say his name, but he's a very famous director right now. That's the hint. But when I joined his group, I thought he was the captain. I was like, oh, he must be the captain because he starts all the scenes. He seems to be making all the decisions. And then later I learned.
I can already tell who you're talking about.
No way you know who I'm talking about.
I'll ask you off here.
I've got a hunch.
Go ahead. Ask right now.
Adam McKay?
No, I'm a good friend with Adam
McKay. I thought you were. I was going to say the guy that did 40-Year-Old Virgin. What's that
Judd Apatow.
Yes.
No, he wasn't in improv. But
he was in a stand-up background.
Okay. But you know that... that contest I told you about in UMass?
Yeah.
About a year ago, a good friend of mine, no, it was a few years ago, a good friend of mine who I went to college with and is now a sitcom writer, he sent me the review of that show that I told you about, that UMass show. And it gave both me and him a really good review, which is why he was sending it to me. And he was like, look at who emceed that show. And it was spelled wrong. It was spelled Judd Apatow, but it happened to be Judd had emceed that show. That was one of his first big gig. Uh-huh. Isn't that funny?
That's funny.
So I sent that to Judd. No, I get along with Judd and Adam. They put me in their movies. How could I not?
I was curious if it was like the first impression that later you learned.
No, I was on – Ab and I started at the same time, so mm-hmm. He was joining things at the same time I was. This I will tell you off the air, but I don't think you would ever guess who it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, I realized, no, he's just a fucking narcissistic asshole, and he thinks he's the captain, but no one should be the captain.
Right.
Yeah. It's not that kind of art form.
It seems like if you go that route, you're still following a script in your own head, and mm-hmm. it's not really improv. You're not letting the other, you know, come to play in it at all.
Well, it's an interplay. You gotta have the interplay, otherwise it's not exciting. Speaking of interplay, let's play one of the clips that you sent us.
All right, these are new. These are new to me too, because my album is coming out January 7th. What's today? The 5th, and.
This is perfect.
It's right after the new year, and this Comedy Dynamics, the company that's putting it out, it's also going to be on CESO.com. They're all getting back from the new year going, oh my God, it's time to do all this stuff. So they're all making the clips today for this very show, and I haven't even heard them yet, so I don't even know what they are.
I love that.
So I can't set them up.
Do you know what's the album called?
It's called Besser Breaks the Record because I'm breaking all comedy records and breaking the records of my comedy nemesis of the Soviet Union alternative comedy scene, Ivan Krushnev Jr. That's all part of the plot of my special.
Awesome.
But so I don't know what this is. Let's find out.
Just pick a clip.
Yeah.
I mean, you should have them.
Sounds good.
The last letters in the word Republican spell I can. I know who I'm voting for. Lucy Tesoro, Yonkers, New York. Damn you, Lucy, you're right! I know you guys haven't thought of it. I was like, this can't be true. And I looked at it. It's true. The last letters, the Democrat spells rat. And I was like, fuck, we're not going to win the election now. How are people going to find out about this? And I was like, we can't lose the Democrats. So I stood up all night and I looked over Republican over and over again. And then it hit me. The middle letters of Republican spell Publica. And Republicans hate Publicas.
Okay, sorry. I wish I'd known what that was because it probably did need some setup. In my special, I read letters to the editor just that I've found online or in magazines or newspapers over the years because I've always, like I said, I have a punk rock beginnings, and I think mm-hmm. the only thing angrier than the lyrics of a punk rock song are the words in a letter to an editor. So, and that was a letter to the Chicago Tribune about Democrats, last letters. And the word Democrat spells rat. And then, of course, I get to the Publica thing. But that brings up something I was thinking about today when Obama gave that awesome speech on gun control. That as much as I'm an entertainer, and entertainers are theoretically, I guess, supposed to appeal, you're aiming to appeal to as many people as possible and to the so-called mainstream, and I don't know if I can be that because I feel like I hate at least 50% of the population.
Yeah, that's Isn't that funny? Like, to be successful, you have to do that. You have to kind of.
But I can't. And like I said, I'm just a natural asshole. And people look at me and punch me in the face. But I.
Can you run for president? Seriously.
Well, that's the thing. It's like Trump. It's like most people I know just can't fucking stand him and all the bullshit he stands for these days. But look at how many people love him.
I know. Yeah. That's and, like a reflection of our country.
I know. So it's like. Yeah. It's wild. I don't even want to appeal to you. Like, yeah, even if you think I'm funny, go fuck yourself, because I hate you so much.
Yeah.
And our studio audience loved your clip, by the way. They're 100% Democratic. No, but I agree with you.
Well, they sound Republican because they're all clapping for nonsense.
Very politely, yeah. They're very clenched butthole claps.
So let me ask you a question. So what inspired you to start the Upright Citizens Brigade, and like, how did you pool the people and the vision together?
It was at this same place, Improv Olympic, that I was meeting all these people. Adam McKay being one of them, Horatio Sands, Ian Roberts, Matt Walsh, a few years later, Amy Poehler. Yeah. But we wanted to be a sketch group. We were a sketch group. We wanted to be a sketch group on TV. Kids in the Hall were a big influence and
great show.
Goal. We looked at them and like, they did it. They did exactly what we want to do. We want to work hard, prove ourselves, and someone give us a show. And back then, especially, there just was barely any of that. But we held on hope. We figured we're in the improv capital of the world, pretty much the sketch capital of the world. Why can't we do that? And we stuck it out for years, eventually moved to New York with the expressed goal of being specifically on Comedy Central.
So you started in Chicago then?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought it started in New York.
Mm-mm.
Huh.
Well, the theater started in New York. The sketch group started in Chicago. We didn't have the theater. The theater was never a plan. And even when I get introduced as a founder of the UCB, of all the things I'm proud of, that's not – like, I'm proud of the theater, but I don't think of myself as a founder. I never thought at any point in my career, I want to go found a theater. Like, it was more, I want to make a space where me and my friends can perform and not have a bunch of assholes tell us what to do. Because there was a lot of that, especially when we moved to New York. A lot of, you can't do that. You can't shoot a gun on stage and get your fake blood off our chair. And no, you can't store your props here. And you're playing your music to just all these things that we hated.
That sounds about right.
To the point where we're like, fuck this. We're making enough money with our box office to rent our own space. And then... it was exponential from there, but it was never, let's move to New York and start a theater. It was always just like, let's have a hassle-free environment for us and our friends.
And you thought New York was the place.
Well, at that point, and I keep showing my age, but at that point, Comedy Central was based in New York. It's based more in they have headquarters both places, but then it was more fully in New York, so that was the place to go sell your show if you wanted to be on Comedy Central at that point.
Isn't that still where their hub is?
No, it's in LA now.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it pretty much changed while we were there, even. I would say very few networks are based in New York. They might have representatives out there.
And how did you build the buzz? Like, was it, sounds like grassroots.
Yeah, how did the show and the theater time out as far as how those...
We didn't get the theater until, I think, the third season of the show. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it was never a plan, and it's been a hassle the whole way through. Just opening any business is a hassle if you've never done it. I'd suggest not doing it.
It's a lot of paperwork.
Oh, my God, yes.
Stupid paperwork.
So much paperwork and permits and dealing with neighbors and landlords and just all sorts of fucking legal bullshit that, as a comedian, I never thought I'd have to be involved in. Mm-hmm. And it's not been fun. And it's probably boring the listener. But that was part of it. And but building buzz, it was never like, let's build it. Just, I think that's what's great about the theater is because the prices are kept low and most shows are either free or $5 at most $10, And the way our artistic director works with all the shows and the comedians, it doesn't feel like a lot of stand-up clubs do. It doesn't feel like, I keep going back to the word hassle. It's just not a hassle. So I think it's just that's why a lot of comedians have been attracted to our theater, and it carries that vibe, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does. I saw a show there maybe about 2 months ago, and I was totally impressed. It actually, you know, there's a lot of improv in LA. Like, I've grown up with it. I've seen a lot of friends that started sketch comedy groups, or I've been the music for some of them. Mm-hmm. But I got to say, like, I was most impressed with Upright Citizens Brigade because there was, like, a collective vision. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, so that was, you know, the fascination with that question. Like, I wanted to know, like, collectively, how did you all come to the place where it was like, okay, let's start this, because you did exactly what you wanted to. You created a space for artists that are like, you know, this is something that is attractive, you know, and you give them the opportunity, because yeah, it wasn't really there in the same way. It wasn't organized in the same way.
Yeah. Another thing I'm plugging is on the same this website, CISO.com, is an, what would you call it, an offshoot of NBC, but it's going to be a comedy platform. Speaking of Kids in the Hall, all their library is going to be on there. The entire Monty Python library is on there.
That's amazing.
SNL. Awesome. So if you're a comedy nerd, that's the only place you can get all this stuff. And I think it's exciting to be a part of that with those people I just mentioned. But there's going to be, in addition to my special Besser Breaks the Record, there's going to be a show on it called the UCB show, and it's going to be a variety show that we shot at our theater on Sunset.
That's the new one that just opened last year.
Yeah. And I'm proud of it. Like, when people say, what are you proud of? I'm more proud of the content on the stage than the stage itself, if that mm-hmm. makes any sense.
Yeah.
But this is finally a way that anyone anywhere in the country can see what's going on at the UCB, because it's the best acts from the year, and it's people, a lot of people you may already know, like Andy Daly or James Adomian.
Awesome.
Those kind of guys.
Well, it's great that they're coming back too.
But more, I think more impressive is the people you don't know yet, who you're going to see, and then in 2 years, they're going to be the star of some show,
right,
and then you can go, oh, you know, yeah, you know, that's what Aziz was. That's what Aubrey Plaza was. That's what all these, they were just 20-year-old, young 20-year-olds being talented at some point that nobody knew, and that now they're, you know, top of their game.
It's got to make you feel good that you created that.
Yeah.
You created that.
Yeah, but like I said, I'd rather say I provided that than created that, because that almost gives me too much credit for their talent.
He's humble. I like it.
But yeah, it's, they're there. They're having a good time. They found a place where they can hone their material and get it out there. And now we have this show that we can show it off to everybody, because it used to be you had to come to New York or L.A. to see it.
Well, let's play another clip. What do we got next?
From the album. It just says clip one.
All right. I don't know what this is.
I like that you played it out of order.
I hope it's not the same clip.
Here we go.
The most angry letters the editor get is during political season, right? Makes sense. The Democrats, Republicans going at each other. So I'm going to read one of those. This was from the last election. The last letters of the word Democrat spell rat.
Oh, same clip.
Sorry, that's embarrassing.
No, it's all good.
Sorry, folks.
Well, that was an earlier bit of the bit, wasn't it?
Huh?
Yeah.
Did we get a little bit more on the front end?
Yeah, you actually, that was the front end.
I gave the setup more?
Yeah, let's hear it,
No, because, no, let's not hear it again.
Do we have another clip?
Those were the two.
That's it, and I'm embarrassed that...
He didn't even let it play.
The company provided the same clip twice. I said, I need three clips, so they sent the same clip three times.
They totally cut up like a two-minute clip and just gave like a one-minute clip and another one-minute clip.
Oh, boy.
So that's what it looks like.
With the time, there are two things you've done that I'm a big fan of that I'd love to ask you about if we have a few minutes. One was a few years ago, it was In Search of Miracle Man.
Mm-hmm.
That was last year. I wanted to know how I love Rich Fulcher too, and I was curious how that idea came up. I loved it, and your podcast.
Well, in Search a Miracle Man, you can probably find on YouTube right now if you put that exact wording in there, mm-hmm. or maybe Adult Swim, because that's what it was on. You can find it on their website. But it was one of those one-offs they do late at night, these infomercial kind of parodies. And the original idea wasn't an infomercial parody as much as we wanted to do a show about kind of a cult. And the idea was that there's this man out there who by description almost sounds like a modern day Jesus, mm-hmm. but yet it isn't religious. It's almost like he's just kind of really cool.
Like this mythic dude.
Yeah. You've heard about. So it's something in between like Bigfoot and yeah. Jesus basically.
Yeah.
And then we got this audience who thought we were just shooting a regular infomercial. So just these lunkheads. And
that's amazing.
Rich and I going up to people on the street, real people, doing like those Extends commercials, you know. That was probably the biggest inspiration with those, because I always thought those things were funny because those people are obviously just saying words that were being put into their mouths, mm-hmm. like, just say that it makes it last longer.
We'll give you your free thing.
If you right, we'll give you $20 if you say it lasts longer. So we go up to yeah. people and go, hey, have you heard of Miracle Man? Have you seen Miracle Man? So making people improvise on the moment. And
that's genius.
So there's a lot of Adult Swim kind of awkwardness there.
That's like
there.
The Kimmel lie witness news. Like, mm-hmm. what do you think about Trump coming to restaurant?
I used to do that back in the day in Chicago. I had this giant stuffed pink horse that someone had thrown out in the alley behind my house. And I just took it downtown in Chicago and I put it on the sidewalk. And we would have, when people come by, we'd go, what do you think of the dirty pink horse? And do you think it should be cleaned up? And people just wanting to think they're going to be on TV would go, yeah, man, the city should clean up that pink horse. And then Improv for Humans is my podcast on the Earwolf Network. Uh-huh. And it is the kind of improv that I'm pretentiously bragging about here. But it is the long form I'm talking about. And I have a lot of improvisers you know on it. You can go there right now. Or at Improv for Humans on Twitter, at Matt Besser, and I'll tell you all about it. Or mattbesser.com, and I'll tell you all about it.
Spell out your name just so everybody knows.
MATTBESSER. And, yeah, that's the type of improv we do. And I think it's a lot of fun because I think improv sometimes is really corny and cheesy. But mm-hmm. hopefully this is a little better than that. Is that pretentious of me to say?
No. I totally agree.
It's like, deserved. And it's deserved.
As much as I listen to it and laugh, I'm also just like, man, like it's just,
and
it's,
none of it's scripted at all. Like no.
It always starts a suggestion off of Twitter or us mm-hmm. watching a YouTube video wow. or just have an opinion on something
or
that
a song
that
or
day.
Something. I've heard
yeah,
of
we've had some musicians on. Yeah. We had Milk Carton Kids, Dawes.
That was great. That one, I just yeah,
Murder by Death.
That's
a lot
crazy.
Of good bands on.
Yeah, awesome, Matt. You've been
hey,
such
thanks,
a fascinating
guys.
Guest. I mean, we want you to come back, so please check out Matt Besser. Why don't you give all your websites one more time?
MattBesser.com, UCBTheater.com to find out about our theater. And like I said, CISO.com, folks, it's going to be the new comedy portal. And it's only $4 a month for tons of good comedy if you're a
Booyah!
Comedy nerd.
And the new album is Besser Breaks the
Besser
Record.
Besser Breaks the Record.
Awesome.
So you can get that off Comedy Dynamics or see it on that CISO.com.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
Thanks,
on behalf of Dave Jensen and Matt Besser, I'm Nicky Carulla. We'll see you next week.
Wake up,
good
Hollywood.
Night.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nicky Carulla and Eddie Pence. Right here on LA Talk Radio.